You're listening to Midwest Vegan Radio.
We're sharing all our secrets.
We're sharing all of our secrets just for you special listeners.
With your hosts, Dallas.
That sounds so good.
And Ryan.
Pass the noosh.
Welcome to Midwest Vegan Radio, episode 9.
It's going to be fine.
Are we going to do something goofy every single time for...
Yeah, every
lucky
time.
7, 8.
Yeah.
Okay, we had fumf with 5. Okay. Yeah. Episode 9 is going to be fine. Yep. Again, we're... Okay, so I'm Ryan.
I'm Dallas.
Elliot's over there.
Hello.
Noreen decided to take a vacation, which we're not paying her for.
We don't pay her anyway.
So she's not here. So hope you're having a good time on your vacation. We'll try to get through this without you. Again, we're dealing with ridiculous weather.
Yeah.
Like we did during our last recording.
But that's so. Okay. Yeah. I think it'll be a good one. We're going to talk about movies today.
Yes, movies.
Yeah.
I like those.
Who doesn't like movies?
I don't know. Elliot, do you like movies?
Yes, I like movies.
Of course. So we're going to talk about movies and animal rights and veganism, kind of how they all tie in, a couple of our favorites, a couple ones that, you know, are worth talking about, even if they're not our favorites. So we'll talk about movies.
Should we talk about the one that everyone asks us if we've seen because we're vegan?
Yeah.
Dallas, have you seen Food, Inc.?
I have seen Food, Inc.
Because you're vegan, so you've seen Food, Inc., right? That movie's good because you're vegan.
I've seen Food, Inc. I wasn't the biggest fan of Food, Inc.,
but
I've seen it.
Why would that be?
Well, I learned a lot about seeds, but aside from that, it was not a pro-vegan movie.
Oh, you didn't like when they were slaughtering chickens in the movie?
Quote-unquote humanely slaughtering chickens in the movie?
Oh, yeah, when they, like, stuck them in that weird cone thing and... So they're,
yeah, in front of all the other chickens?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's good for people to see that. But again, it's not representative of the vast majority of the way that chickens are slaughtered in this country or elsewhere.
No.
And it's absolutely not humane, which is the way that it was portrayed in the movie.
Okay, here's what humane is. Not killing things.
Well, I'm going to paraphrase the definition of humane, which is probably not the best thing to do is paraphrase a definition because that isn't really what a definition is. But
Elliot, will you allow it?
Yeah, I'll allow it.
Okay, great. So humane is, the definition is something like having what are considered to be the best human qualities, which is compassion, tenderness, mercy. There's another one, but
I
can't remember.
I actually looked it up.
Okay.
Do you want me to not paraphrase and just
say
go
for it.
So the definition of humane first would be compassionate, showing the better aspects of the human character, especially kindness and compassion, involving minimal pain, done without inflicting more pain than is necessary.
Right. And since killing animals to eat them
is
not, we don't need to do that. So it's unnecessary.
And with emphasis on liberal views. With an emphasis on respect for other people's views.
Right. Well, mercy was in my definition as well somewhere, but I
wouldn't go as far as to say this is a comprehensive...
All-inclusive definition.
But another part of it is marked by compassion, sympathy, or consideration for humans or animals.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, well, if you are to not... cause any more harm than is necessary in order to be humane, and it is not necessary to hurt or kill animals to eat them. Ergo, there is no such thing as humane slaughter. Or humane meat.
I got into a debate with
roadkill, maybe,
that you walked away from at the Living Green Expo when we were there tabling with the Animal Rights Coalition. And the guy was talking about how humanely he killed his animals, and I said
he was one of these grass-fed farmers.
Oh, yeah,
ranchers.
And I said, if you care about this, which you seem to care about things being humane, is it not more humane to not kill animals at all? Can't argue that.
You can't.
Nope.
That's true. It's a good way it's a good soundbite.
Who came up with that phrase? I want to say it was Will Potter. I could be wrong, but or maybe it was. Somebody else. Actually, I know who it is. It was in an article called An Inconvenient Truth, Free Range Meat Isn't Natural. And I'm going to go ahead and paraphrase, but I think he referred to it as like an ethical or carnival of ethics, I think is what he referred to it as.
Who's he?
The he being James McWilliams.
Okay.
Who is an associate professor at the history at Texas State University.
And there'll be a link to this on our blog.
Yep. And it also, he's the author of Just Food, Where Locavores Get It Wrong and How We Can Truly Eat Responsibly. Mm-hmm. So that's I should definitely put that. He wrote a piece for The Atlantic, the Inconvenient Truth piece was for The Atlantic. And I really like that term, like carnival of ethics.
It's good.
Is what?
It's descriptive.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. It's kind of. I don't know. I don't remember who said this exactly, but there's the people
we really have our facts straight.
I know. Well, this is.
You're welcome.
The guy. Somebody was talking about Michael Pollan and basically how he's the one who wrote. What was the book he wrote?
Omnivore's Dilemma.
Omnivore's Dilemma. Right.
The POS Omnivore's Dilemma.
Yeah, and I was talking with somebody about the Omnivore's Dilemma, and basically the way they described it is that, you know, since there is no logical way to like equate morality and eating animals. So, you know, this dilemma is basically imaginary, and the way that people rationalize eating animals when they consider themselves to be ethically, you know, ethical omnivores is that essentially what they do is they throw up their hands and say, oh, it's just all above me. You know, the universe is so huge. And it's just like shirking the whole moral responsibility.
Well, and Michael Pollan is a fan of romanticizing eating animals. And so they talk about the heritage bred or whatever, these companies that are trying to bring back these heritage breeds where, you know, they say, and I'm sorry if some of this sounds familiar to some of you because Colleen Patrick Goudreau talks about this, but, you know, to eat them or to save them, we have to eat them.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They wouldn't even exist if we weren't raising them to eat them. And so we're saving them.
Oh,
and
we're doing them a favor by eating them. Yeah.
But then Colleen points out, you know, we didn't have to eat the bald eagle to save the bald eagle.
Exactly.
From extinction. Yeah. So, like, no, we don't have to do this. And as I've mentioned before, were these animals to become extinct, would that be so bad? I mean, to be raised, to be killed?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly would be better to be extinct. But at the same time, like, I think it's so speciesist because, you know, whales are on the verge of extinction and people are furious with the Japanese who, you know, they're saying that
there's
they're killing
them.
There's
even a TV show about it.
There's a TV show, Whale Wars, about that. But
which, if you were so inclined, you could pick up a copy of Whale Wars at Ethique Nouveau.
Yes, you could. But yeah, I mean, people love whales. They're all about protecting whales and they're endangered. And, you know, but chickens, if there's a quote unquote rare chicken breed.
But they taste good, Dallas.
But, well, to save those, we need to breed them to eat them.
Right. Because otherwise we can't save them.
Right.
Because otherwise we have chickens running around all over the place.
But we're not breeding whales or bald eagles.
I imagine bald eagles would have in some sanctuary captivity situation been bred to save.
Then you're getting close to zoos. I think, again, it's more about preserving habitat and protecting the environment, which is why we have a green challenge every episode.
Yeah. I actually heard something interesting about that too. When, you know, is there a point to, again, I think this is probably stolen directly from Colleen, but is there a point to saving and trying to breed in captivity in sanctuary situations to repopulate these animals who are going extinct if we don't have a place for them because we've destroyed their habitats anyway? If they have nowhere to live, what are we saving them for?
We should do an episode all about zoos because they just infuriate me. But I don't really know about, the breeding in captivity. I mean, I'm not totally sure with that. I mean, all of the accredited sanctuaries that I'm aware of do not allow breeding. That's part of, the sanctuary standard. As far as I'm aware.
I'll take your word for it. I think I swear there's, not to get into the zoo situation. Someone I used to work with sent me a link. She was all excited about this wolf sanctuary that I think we have in Minnesota. It was in Minnesota and Wisconsin,
the wolf center
sanctuaries. And they kind of treat them like zoos almost, mm-hmm. where they, you know, they sell food, they sell animal meat in these sanctuaries, yeah. which is...
And they have them on exhibit.
Yeah.
Which, again, I mean, the Wildcat Sanctuary in Sandstone, Minnesota, they do not allow people, it's not open to the public. And, you know, because it stresses the animals out and it's not good for them, wild animals, they get stressed out being, right. you know, out in the open and exposed like that. So anyway, that's a red flag. And just word to the wise in terms of a lot of places are calling themselves a sanctuary now because it's popular and people want to support sanctuaries, but do be skeptical. Don't just presume that because somebody has sanctuary in their name that they really are.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get back to movies.
Yeah, we started really with movies.
Okay, so
Food Inc.
So we talked about Food Inc. briefly. Not the biggest fan, but you may as well see it if you're vegan because everybody's at, you know.
They're all going to ask you if you've seen it.
Ask you.
And what you think of it. Although there is good information in Food Inc. I think primarily what Food Inc. is about is the like dirty underbelly of genetically modified seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that.
Which is important.
Which is really important to know about. And these farmers that are like getting driven out of business because they're not buying these. And, you know, these Roundup Ready crops where like only like you have to buy these certain kind of crops and then you have to buy this certain kind of weed killer. And these farms are being put out of business. These plant yeah. agriculture farms are going out of business because they're not buying these seeds. And if any of these seeds end up on their property because the neighbors happen right. to be using those seeds, then these farmers are getting sued and losing.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And a good reason to buy organic.
Yeah.
Another one that's kind of related, I would say, to Food Inc. would be Super Size Me.
Yes.
A lot of people ask about that one, too, or say that they've seen that,
that
one,
That was
too.
A really interesting movie. I saw that long before I was vegan. But it did help me when I was interested in going organic. A long time ago, I went organic, and I felt really, really well. And when I mean organic, I'm talking organic Pop-Tarts or toaster pastries, I guess, because Pop-Tarts is a brand that yep. isn't organic. But
you started buying more organic products.
It definitely opened my eyes to not wanting to put kind of this fast food crap in my body. And since there's not a lot of fast food options as a vegan, I don't really have to worry about that so much.
Yeah, I was I thought Super Size Me was good. They didn't really, I mean, the Morgan Spurlock's girlfriend was vegan. And I thought it was good that she put him on a vegan diet to mm-hmm. detox from all of that and helped him lose weight and helped him get healthier a lot more quick. I mean, just quickly.
It was alarming to watch what happened to him though, eating this
right.
processed garbage.
But it's a testament to say, hey, we're going to put you on a whole foods vegan diet. Most,
to
you know,
save you.
Organic. Yeah, essentially. And how relatively quickly he was able to recover from that,
mm-hmm.
you know, really extreme condition that he
Which
put himself in.
Is really important to point out. And I'm sorry, I'm thinking we're probably going to end up digressing a lot because movies are about things. And so as we talk about these movies, we'll end up talking about their subject matter a little bit. But, and I assume we'll also end up talking about Forks Over Knives.
But yeah, it's on
really
the list.
How reversible these diseases of excess that we've kind of ailed ourselves with through the diets, that the standard American diet, the SAD diet, if you will, how quickly you can turn your life around and get off medications.
Yeah.
And things like that, just with your diet. You have so much more power than you can possibly imagine just by eating food that is for nourishment instead of, I mean, food is tied into everything. It's tradition and it's, you know, it's a reward and it, you know, we indulge in food. And that's not to say that if you're vegan, you can't ever indulge in, because we do.
We
in
do
our
indulge.
Our interview today will be indulgent, of course, but, food is such medicine. People just don't realize.
Yeah. Well, Forks Over Knives, I thought was fantastic.
It was really, really, really
I would definitely
awesome.
Recommend that one. And yep. it's relevant, which
and
the other
was,
two are not as relevant to
and
veganism.
I would say for family members that are maybe afraid of the scary V word, veganism, I think they mentioned the word vegan once in the
one
movie.
One time.
Yep. Because really, Whole Foods plant-based diet doesn't scare people the way that vegan tends to evoke either hippies or extreme or thanks PETA throwing paint on people in fur coats. So I think that you can maybe that would be a good one to show to people where they're not going to hear the word vegan over and over and over. The movie is completely and utterly about food as medicine. It's not about being vegan because
it doesn't go into environment. It doesn't go into animals. It doesn't go into, you know, any of the other stuff. It's really just about health.
And vegan, I actually wrote an article for This Dish Is Veg. No, maybe it was for my own blog that I wrote this, about taking the word vegan back and what vegan means and what it doesn't mean. Being a dietary vegan isn't being vegan. I mean, you may eat that way, but being vegan is more about ethical decisions that you make on every level. It's, you know, when we say vegans tend to care more about public transportation or biking or walking or, you know, not contributing to things that hurt the environment, reusable bags, we tend to be more ethical vegans, not dietary vegans, tend to be more environmentally minded. We seek out products for personal care that are not tested on animals. We don't buy leather or wool or silk. And so it's bigger than just what you will and won't eat. But that movie specifically is about
it's about the impact that your choices have on others, whereas dietary vegans are all about the impact your choices have on you.
Yep, and your health.
And your own health.
And that's, I mean, if you're a dietary vegan, good.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
That's a good place to start.
Yeah.
And it's a good starting point.
But, I mean, Forks Over Knives, definitely recommend it. Definitely recommend that as a thing to watch with, yeah, like you said, friends or family who have whatever kind of health issues maybe or concerns.
And I think everybody knows somebody that has health issues that can be cured by diet.
Yeah. And the other thing too, I think it would be a good movie for people to show their worried mothers or grandmothers who think that you're going to die,
wither
up and just shrivel up if you eat this way.
Right. Because and Dallas is actually a zombie because she's been vegan for like 15 years. And so, Dallas actually died because she's vegan and couldn't get any protein. And so she's actually dead. She's a zombie. So this would be good to show your family members that you can be a healthy vegan zombie.
Yeah. So going along with the whole documentary theme that we've got, there's The Cove, which was also mainstream. That was in mainstream theaters, but about animal issues as opposed to food issues.
Yeah, that was specifically about like hunting sea mammals, dolphins.
Dolphins and
like
Taiji. Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah. Don't go to SeaWorld. I have a few things on my bucket list, and swimming with dolphins was one of them, and I actually had to take that off my list because I don't think I'm ever going to be in a situation where that will come up in an organic sort of way.
Yeah.
I'm not going to swim with captive dolphins.
Nope.
I can't do it. It actually made me really bummed, but
yeah, it's like I just
can't.
Yeah, I'm never going to ride horses again, and that's kind of a bummer.
Oh, I used to love horseback riding, but every time I see a bridled horse, I just want to tear my hair out. And it's people are like, oh, no, but the horses like it. And I'm thinking, given the option of having a 150, 200-pound person on you, kicking you, making you run, or
things
not.
Things stuck in your mouth,
right,
metal.
I'd choose not.
Yeah, I would choose autonomy over that.
Yeah.
The Cove, it's difficult to watch, but it's a good one to watch. And there's actually quite a lot of activity happening about that particular campaign simply because of that movie. Rick O'Berry, he was the trainer of Flipper. And he's kind of like the Howard Lyman of dolphins, I think. Like, he used to be way involved in, exploiting dolphins in captivity. And he came to believe that that's wrong, just morally and ethically, inexcusable. And so he's since dedicated his life and all that he knows about dolphins to helping to protect and preserve wild populations.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really, really fantastic. And so if you haven't seen it, I'm sure it's on Netflix or something. Mm-hmm. But it's definitely
worth watching. It had a pretty wide release. It was...
Oh, yeah. It was big. Yeah. And the other thing, too, is that it played out kind of like a spy movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was this whole element of suspense and high-tech
machinery. When you made that movie, like, you know, we think about... When you know people in the animal rights movement that have done things like Dallas has done with open rescues and things like that, where... You know, now you don't dare show your face. You like are living underground trying to be secret about exposing these cruelties that are happening to animals in like factory farm settings and things like that. And what these people had to do to expose this and the trouble that they faced. And they were in another country, which is even more terrifying because you don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you could end up locked in a prison somewhere. Nobody would ever know where you were.
And... Yeah. It's definitely there's suspense and.
Yeah.
Some, you know, it's a good one.
And really, you know, I hate to say this, but you know, if you know anybody that's ever participated in something like that, and I'm lucky enough to know a few people, I mean, thank them, thank them for their bravery and for the trauma that they'll probably live the rest of their lives knowing and seeing firsthand. And I'm not talking about watching something on YouTube, but seeing the violence and suffering firsthand. I mean, you almost owe it to these people that have risked their lives and their freedom to capture this. What's so trying to be hidden from us so that we can continue living the way that we are. I mean, you really owe it to these pioneers. Every single one of these people, I think, that do things like this, like you and another good friend of ours. I don't know if I want to say her name.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
But you're open about what you did.
Yeah,
and I think you did it at a different time.
I did.
I mean,
But, you know, I would say also just, I mean, we can talk about the Animal Liberation Front in another episode, but I absolutely support the Animal Liberation Front. And I think that it's incredibly brave. And,
it is. It's very brave.
And really, really important.
People willing to go in. And, oh, my gosh, can you imagine these people that go in and obtain a job at a slaughterhouse or...
Oh, doing undercover work?
Oh.
Yeah, I can't. That's not... anything that I will be doing. But I mean, I couldn't anyway. I'm way too public about who I am, but
so
yeah,
you owe it to these people, I think, to watch some of these movies and see what they've risked their lives to expose.
Well, yeah, I mean the animals more, but absolutely. Skin trade.
Oh, skin trade. So the Animal Rights Coalition last summer, I believe it was.
Yep.
Hosted the Minneapolis premiere. That's premiere with an E on the end.
There were some spelling issues. Skin trade, yeah. That's about the fur industry.
Yep. And Shannon Keith did that, and she also did Behind the Mask, which
we'll talk about in a minute.
You know, when you're involved in this movement, I think it's always surprising when you learn more. you think you know everything that there is to know, like all of the different ways that animals are being exploited, and then all of a sudden, like, you just hear or see another thing, like maybe you knew a little bit about. Obviously, I knew fur was bad. I had no idea to the extent of how bad fur was. And for those of you walking around in faux fur, that could be a cat or dog, actually. So you might not want to do that. Shannon
Keith's documentary. You can check out the Truth in Labeling Act.
Yeah.
Which we could also put on the blog, I suppose.
Yep.
But absolutely. And I thought that really good portion of that was about the environment, mm-hmm. which I thought was great. And I guess with veganism, there's a whole lot of people that just believe that focusing on farmed animals is the way to go. Farmed animals, farmed animals, farmed animals, farmed animals. They're the most, you know, the by far the most numbers of animals killed are farmed animals.
And,
so,
and to go along with that, a lot of the farmed animal concern is from a welfare perspective.
Right.
And it's to help the welfare of farmed animals. So
and
bigger cages.
Reform the way that they're, yeah, which right. definitely we should talk about another time. But mm-hmm. The thing is though, when you look at this, the fur issue, it's very odd to me. I think the animal rights movement in general screwed up somewhere along the line. And I don't quite know exactly how it happened, but there was a time at which fur was, I mean, the fur industry was kind of weak.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's made a comeback, and it's very strong. And, you know, looking at this, yeah, a lot of there are a lot of people that think wearing fur is horrible. And granted, as an abolitionist, I kind of think, okay, well, that's a great opportunity to talk about speciesism with people. Like, mm-hmm. that's a foot in the door to say, yeah, this happens to these animals for their fur, and that's not necessary, and neither is wearing any animal's skin necessary. And, you know, it's not. So having a conversation from that place. But again, like, I think that it is definitely important for us to continue, not let go and think, oh, we, you know, that's over, or that industry is dying, so it's going to, you know, die off on its own or something. So we're all going to shift our focus.
I learned so much from Skin Trade. It was very, very difficult to watch. And we actually did a screening here at MVR Studios before there was such a thing, where we watched Skin Trade before we hosted the Minneapolis premiere, because we needed to know what we were showing people.
Right.
And I don't think there was a dry eye here. And it was, there were funny parts. It was educational, but it was so painful. I don't think people understand. And honestly, again, with fake fur, it could be real fur. It really, really could, because of the Truth in Labeling Act, and that, you know, fake fur comes from a lot of times other countries.
Well, yeah, we'll have a link to the Truth in Labeling Act, but doing the Cuddle Coats program at the mm-hmm. Animal Rights Coalition, where I work, we take in furs from places, and it's
people,
kind of surprising. Yeah. It's surprising to me how much fake fur we do get in, and how a lot of people can't tell the difference. So to me, it's pretty obvious by feel, which is which, but it's not apparently to many people. A lot of people, you know, will donate fake fur thinking that it is real.
Yeah.
And
some fake fur is pretty good though.
Yeah.
I walked into a store that pledged to participate in the Cuddle Coat program. It's a secondhand store, and they so the Animal Rights Coalition had worked with some local businesses and is still working with mm-hmm. local businesses to get them to pledge not to sell fur. And I walked in there one day and I saw a coat that had a fur collar, lining, or
collar.
And knowing that the store had taken the fur free pledge, I knew I touched it and I was like, I'm certain this is fur. And I, you know, like I kind of thumbed through it to get to the bottom. Cause you can, if you look at where the fur is or fake fur is attached, that's really, if you can't tell by feel, the best way to tell is by looking at where the fur is attached to.
Yep, to see if there's fabric.
Right. And it was definitely real. And I brought it up to the owner and she's like, oh my gosh, someone must've bought that on accident. And so she actually was able to rip the fur off without destroying the coat. She took a seam ripper to it and took the fur piece off, saved the coat, and gave that to me to bring back to the Animal Rights Coalition along with a bag of fur that they had been collecting. But yeah, sometimes you think you're buying fake fur, and I mean, if you don't know, how do you know?
Yeah.
If you don't know how to check, but why would you even want to be promoting? And I think people don't realize with the fur industry that these animals are anally electrocuted, gross, and not nice. And a lot of times they are skinned. I shouldn't even say a lot of times, pretty much all times they're skinned alive. Their fur is taken off of them while they are still alive.
We should have I don't. Well,
sorry for making everyone cry.
We should talk about fur in another episode a little bit, because I have a lot of.
I think every single thing that comes up, you're going to say we should talk about another episode.
Yeah, probably. So we alluded to Behind the Mask, mm-hmm. which. I love this movie. So
this was Shannon Keith's first documentary,
yep,
right?
It was her first documentary. She has a, I don't know, production company called Army
Animal
A-R-M-E.
Rights.
Yep. Animal Rights Education or Animal Rights.
Animal
Media Education.
Yeah.
Yep. So Behind the Mask, it's a documentary about the Animal Liberation Front. And so being that I am a supporter of the Animal Liberation Front, I thought this was a fantastic movie and I think everybody should see it. It's great. It's a great way to kind of get a lot of information about a really misrepresented group of people.
Yeah.
And that's all that I really want to say.
Most of the videos, I'd say, can either be purchased through the Animal Rights Coalition, or you could order them
yep.
at the Ethique Nouveau. sell if you didn't have it on hand?
Yeah. Well, mostly, or we can say where to get it. But Skin Trade and Behind the Mask, I think you could just go to army.org.
Mm-hmm. But if you're local, come buy it from the Animal Rights Coalition.
And then the last documentary to talk about would be Earthlings. That is on our list. And it's called... Earthlings has another name, an unofficial nickname. It's called the Vegan Maker. And Earthlings is... What I tell people about Earthlings is that if you're already vegan and you're already doing what you can to help, there's no reason for you to watch this movie.
I tried. I put it on my Netflix queue. I'm guessing a lot of these you could get through Netflix. And as we were waiting for it to show up, I watched the trailer for Earthlings and I didn't make it through the trailer. When I got to the fur part, I feel like I've seen so much slaughterhouse stuff that I'm kind of used to it. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I'm desensitized to it, but it just doesn't kind of hit me the same way that some of these things that I don't normally think about on a regular basis, like fur, that it was actually the fur part that hit me. And so then, you know, sitting through Skin Trade, because I had to stop at the trailer when I saw the fur stuff.
That was before.
I was already vegan, but I hadn't seen Skin Trade yet. I don't know that Skin Trade was out yet.
So you were already vegan when you saw Earthlings trailer.
The trailer, yeah.
But it was before Skin Trade.
It was before Skin Trade.
Okay.
So I'm on my computer and I'm watching the trailer, and Earthlings movie is five parts, I think. It covers like five different... Is that right?
Chapters, yeah.
It's like five different things that it covers. So it's, it covers fur, covers animal agriculture.
What else? Companion animals.
Yep.
Animals in research and maybe animals in entertainment, maybe.
I don't know.
Or animals used for clothing.
Where I got hung up in the trailer was at the fur part, and I curled up in a ball on my couch and I cried for a half hour, and my husband's like, what can I do? What can I do? And I'm like, I just let me cry. And I think, kind of as a side note, when you're in this movement and or you're watching things like this, it's important to allow yourself to feel the way that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you have to be vulnerable to be strong. You have to process these feelings because they're so difficult. But on the flip side, it also can be extremely motivating, because as soon as Skin Trade came out and the Animal Rights Coalition was doing the premiere for that, all I wanted to do was be involved in Skin Trade and just make that movie happen and make sure people came to see that, make that premiere happen.
Well, I think when people, what I tell people, cause I see a lot of this footage all the time. And, if you haven't seen Earthlings and you think that you can do it, do it. If you're already vegan, you're already doing things to help, and you think that it would be difficult for you, don't do it, because it will, you know, don't subject yourself to unnecessary trauma. However, if you feel like you're the kind of person that can watch this so that you
will be motivated
so that you can know more, because you probably will learn something in there that you hadn't.
I learned a lot from the trailer.
You know, if you're thinking about going vegan and you haven't yet, definitely do it. What I tell people is, you know, if you're doing anything to contribute to this violence, it's your responsibility to witness that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, essentially be...
How are you paying other people to do it?
Yeah. I mean, people don't like to hear that, obviously. Mm-hmm. Nobody likes to hear that, but that's really how I feel. And I even told that to my mom, you know, which was a really big deal for me, because I want to protect my mom, obviously. I mean, I love her dearly, but it was kind of weird, because I'm thinking, well, this would hurt her if she saw this, but she's contributing, so she should see this.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, invited her and she didn't want to do that, but at least I told her the same thing that I told everybody else, and I was being consistent, which is important to me. But absolutely, I do think that it's worth checking out if you can. And if
you're going to share that with other people, be ready with a veg starter kit.
Yeah.
Be ready to help them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, the other thing too is that what I tell people when they talk about, like, oh, it's going to be difficult, or I'm scared, or, you know, what if I cry, or it's so painful, I say that's the appropriate response.
Yes.
That's appropriate, and it's good that you feel that way. that means, you know, that means that you have a working heart,
right?
You know, and that you're a compassionate, you know, empathic person. Therefore, let's start getting your actions in line with
right.
your actual values, because right now there's a major disconnect and we need to get that sorted out.
I'd say the biggest reward about being vegan is living authentically and living in accordance with the values that I have and living an ethical life to its fullest. There's no disconnect in my life. I don't participate in industries that I'm not comfortable doing. Like, I wouldn't test on animals, so I try not to buy products that are tested on animals. I wouldn't kill an animal to eat him or her, so I'm not going to pay somebody else to do it. And so I think, you know, health is a bonus, but the biggest reward is just living completely free of hypocrisy. Well, I shouldn't. That's a way bigger topic.
That's a huge thing. But
okay, yes, everyone's
in
a
this
hypocrite,
area.
And you can't. I was just listening to an old Vegan Freaks podcast, and they were talking about somebody had written in or called into their show and said, "How well, if I have to take medication, I know this medication is tested on animals." Okay, it's an imperfect world. Dallas, did you drive here? Did you drive your car here today?
I did.
Elliot, did you drive your car to the studio today?
Yes.
Okay. So I didn't because I live here, but I do drive my car to work, and even my bicycle tires are made of rubber, and the roads that we drive on destroyed animal habitats, and probably you killed a bug or two on your
yep.
way here.
I think so, the roads even have animal products in them.
Yep. I think rubber does. I'm probably the microphones that we're talking into.
Yeah. It animals. Seems to be in everything.
I mean, it is an imperfect world. And so spare us your feelings about vegans being hypocrites.
Right.
Just because we live in an imperfect world doesn't mean that we should do nothing.
Right.
And we can't, you know, if I were to go be a hermit in the woods, is that a better situation? Because then I'm not helping to educate people.
Right. I mean, I think what I like to tell people is that my veganism isn't about personal purity.
No, no.
And I mean, obviously I want to be consistent
right.
in my actions and my values, and I do my very best to do that. Absolutely. But
and if you accidentally consume something that like
that movie, the Chad, the versus the one we watched here,
Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah.
Oh, that movie's so funny. Yes. Or Level 5 vegan. Yeah. When
yeah,
you're,
I don't
when
eat
you're
any.
Level 9 vegan, you get, what? Telepathy.
Yeah.
You get magical powers.
Yeah. Level 5 vegans don't eat anything.
Scott
that casts
Pilgrim
a shadow.
Versus the World is hysterical. In my opinion, you should see that movie.
Yeah. I mean, it. But that's, I mean,
but
that's...
it's not about being perfect. And if I bought something thinking it was vegan and gave it to Dallas and it accidentally had honey in it, Dallas would still be vegan.
We're not going
it's
to
not...
both spontaneously implode.
The vegan police are not going to come take away your vegan badge again, because it's not so much about purity as it is about intent.
You still owe me a vegan police badge.
I owe you a vegan police badge. You're right. I do.
Because I definitely want to be on that squad.
Yeah. You want to go arresting people for being impure?
No, I have different ideas about it, but
ooh.
Yeah, I still think that having, I don't know. I just like the idea of being
we
able
do.
To enforce veganism somehow. I think it would be a great thing.
Dallas is the vegan law in this town.
Yeah, really. I'm the sheriff of veganism.
Well, you're the vegan president too.
Well, yes, it says so on the business cards.
It does.
Okay. So before we're done with documentaries, I just want to toss in one that really should have been mentioned probably in with Food, Inc. and Forks Over Knives, but I forgot about it until now. And that is, it's called Chow Down. And I don't think a lot of people have heard of it before, but it's on Hulu.com and you can see it for free with occasional interruptions for commercials for cars and...
Not meat?
Yeah. Well, actually, I don't know. There might have been something in there. I'm not sure. But anyway, Chow Down is on Hulu. And the thing that I love about this one... especially is it goes into some depth and research about
excuse me
it goes into some depth and research about government subsidies.
Sorry, I'm having a sneeze attack.
So it goes into some depth about government subsidies, and I like that because when people talk to me about I can't go vegan because it's
too
expensive. So expensive, I can say, look, here's, you know, we actually, our tax dollars
paying
are paying
the cost of meat.
Yeah, not at all. And it's infuriating and really frustrating, but it's very cool to see them actually have done the research and to, you know, show this is where the subsidies are going. And
it infuriates me that my tax dollars go to that.
Oh, God, I know. And then healthcare to fix all these preventable health issues. Okay, so Chow Down, go check it out. Now we'll talk about Pretend instead of documentaries.
Maybe not Pretend. Maybe real life themed movies.
Oh, sure. I mean, they're not completely imaginary. It's just, you know, they're fiction movies.
Here's one that you all should know about. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, can we talk about Year of the Dog first? And then, because that one ties in with the other one.
Okay, fine.
Okay. And I don't know much about that one, but Year of the Dog, I just wanted to mention that. I think
we had a screening, or not a screening, a movie
party. We just
got
together and watched Year of the Dog. I'm fascinated by this movie.
Oh, it was
I'm so fascinated. What's the main character? What's the actress's name?
Molly Shannon?
Yes.
Molly Shannon. Apparently people know her from Saturday Night Live. So anyway, I'm not going to give too much away because I really think you should just watch it, but it's essentially about her discovery and awakening to what happens to animals and her personal reaction to that, like her story, her journey, her experience. And I find it very relatable. I mean, it's exaggerated in the movie. But
and we actually had a lot of conversations around whether or not that movie is good to recommend to people that aren't vegan necessarily, because she goes to such an extreme place in trying to help companion animals that it could be construed as vegans being kind of...
Well, hopefully if a vegan recommended it to them, they would know that we're not all whack jobs because they'd know somebody who isn't one.
But there is plenty of portrayal out there of us being
whack jobs, I know. But I think to me, the thing that I related is that it's like I, in another life or on a bad day, that could easily be me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't.
And the great lengths she was willing to go to save dogs that were going to be put down.
Yeah. I mean, I really, really liked her. You know, I mean, just the idea that she's an average person and how she responds to some really extreme, I don't know, extreme knowledge.
Yeah.
But yes, so I do recommend it to anybody who is interested in animal rights, period.
And I think that might serve it also as a cautionary tale to when you learn about these things and they are so difficult and you don't know what to do, maybe
get some help,
some other vegans, and see what other people are doing. Get involved in the Animal Rights Coalition or other activist groups in your area that are doing things that are legal.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, or not that get inspiration, you know, like it, I just think, you know, something that is actually going to be helpful.
But it was beautiful to watch and sad to watch her process, which is so similar to all of ours. Everybody takes this information to a different place.
Yep.
And it was like, she didn't know what to do with it. And she just did.
She did what she did. Could. Yeah. I think it's definitely worth seeing and talking about. I can say that.
But it's a fun movie too. It's just, a bunch of vegans got together and watched it and we almost did it like a book group.
Yeah.
We talked about it afterwards and.
Yeah, I think it's cool.
Yep.
Okay. So we're going to talk about gory things now.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I'm afraid of scary movies, so I don't watch any of these.
Well, what's...
I can't handle it.
What's so interesting about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre is that the things that the family does, the massacrers do to other humans, is what happens to animals. And I think... I'm quite certain the person who did that movie based it off of actual, you know, like actual slaughterhouse practices. And people being strung up on meat hooks, and the sounds of people screaming in the movie were actually pigs being slaughtered. I shouldn't say every single one, but a lot of the screams were animal screams.
Wow.
And, I think it's been so long since I've seen this movie. It came out in 1974, which is before I was even born, and it's been banned in many countries, and a lot of theaters stopped showing the film in response to viewer complaints about the violence, which is so telling of our disconnect. I mean, people refused and complained about the violence in this movie that they participate in usually 3-4 times a day for their meals.
Or their snacks, which kills me. Oh my God, somebody died so you could have a snack.
Yep.
Oh!
So the movie was, I want to say that it kind of revolved around like this town where like a slaughterhouse went out of business. Does this sound right, Elliot? You're into horror movies, right?
Yes. And if I could also interject.
You interject away.
It's based on serial killer Ed Gein is where the story came from.
Okay.
And made by Tobe Hooper.
Okay. So I think that there was like a slaughterhouse that went out of business in the town. And then this family that had worked in the slaughterhouse started doing to people what they were.
Yes. And there are different versions of the movie out, but I think they all have that in common.
The chief one that was from 1974.
Yes.
Yeah. Leatherface. I'm sure you remember Leatherface, who was making clothes, making people clothes, people. Well,
that's the serial killer thing though. This Ed Gein guy made suits out of people.
Yeah.
That Silence of the Lambs was based on the same thing. This is a real guy.
Yeah. I kind of always wanted, I thought it'd be fun because I have a lot of tattoos, to like be turned into a coat, to have my skin turned into a coat out.
I think Ingrid Newkirk has a plan.
Yeah, but her reasoning is all weird. Mine isn't because I want people to do to me what's being done to animals. I want to be barbecued and blah. No, I just think that it'd be fun to have my tattoos turned into a coat.
All right.
Not today. Like
I've seen that like with people, I don't know, women get tattoos and then when they have mastectomies, they frame their breast skin or something. I don't know. It's a thing. I'm pretty sure. Well, I did not make that up, but it came from somewhere and got stuck in my head.
When you get a mastectomy, I think that happened to my aunt when she had breast cancer, like you get a tattoo of a nipple.
Oh,
on your nipple. Oh. Cause you don't have a nipple anymore.
Oh, or so, over the scar or whatever.
Right. So well, some women do that.
Sorry. I'm that was getting us off topic because I haven't seen this movie.
That's a show we don't need to cover.
No. Now that can be the end of that conversation.
Yeah. Although there are huge correlations between fish consumption and breast cancer. So there's that.
Oh, good to
just
know.
Just throwing that out there.
Is that all you guys want to say about Texas Chainsaw?
Yeah.
Because there is another film to talk about.
I think that a lot of horror movies are really based around the violence that is so normal, but kind of behind closed doors in our society.
That's one interpretation of zombie movies as well as now people get to experience what it's like to be the victims of somebody else's dinner.
Yeah.
It kind of turns the table on humans.
Well, that's and also I think a theme in horror films too is being hunted.
Yeah. And I have to tell you, and I can't give any of this away or, you know, penalty of death, but my husband has the greatest zombie movie idea of all time. And I cannot wait until he writes this. And it does relate to animal rights.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So, can you guys talk about Poultrygeist?
I think that should be Elliot.
I know. I want Elliot to talk about it. Basically, I am a dork, and sometimes I will like Google animal rights movies, and this one showed up, Poultrygeist, and I thought, oh, okay. And I clicked on it, and I, again, am terrified of scary movies. I do not do them at all. And gory ones, I don't really, some are not really even scary. They're just really violent and gory and bloody.
Like Hostel?
I don't know. But this one seemed to fall in that camp. It's more just the gory, bloody.
Right.
Just really gory rather than suspenseful, scary.
Right. But anyway. I think the difference is Poultrygeist, all of their gore gags are played as jokes. They're all meant to be funny or campy or, you know, if you're watching the movie, it's kind of a party that you're invited to. Where movies like Hostel, you're meant to feel scared.
Oh, I was so scared during that movie.
It's got nothing on Earthlings, but yes, it's pretty scary. Poultrygeist is by Lloyd Kaufman of Troma fame, who's like the most famous low-budget horror filmmaker.
Oh.
And so everyone studies his work because he knows how to pull a crew together and make things on a very cheap budget. So that was I've studied that movie because it's I think they made it for like $500,000, which is nothing, but they had explosions and lots of good gore gags and musical numbers and things like this.
Musical numbers.
So you should try and make it through the end. But
Poultrygeist What's the general plot? Do chickens come back?
A fast food joint is built on a
Indian burial ground.
Indian burial ground, yep. Yes. And then I don't remember
it's
exactly
a chicken
how
place.
Things happen, but
it's a chicken
yes.
restaurant.
So it's all it's like Poltergeist that these dead Indian souls take over the lives of chickens in a fast food joint, and they come to life and kill everybody.
And take revenge.
Yes.
Of the fast food loving masses.
Yes.
Well, cool. I'm still not going to watch
like horror
it.
Movies.
That's a cool concept.
It is very good.
If you like low budget
and vengeance, apparently.
Yeah. If you like vengeance.
Yes.
Who doesn't like that?
I really like, well, this isn't an animal rights movie thing, but we just watched Inglourious Bastards.
Oh, God.
And it was like
movie.
A World War II Holocaust revenge
yes.
fantasy, Quentin Tarantino.
Yes.
So I'm all about, you know, because I have, so many fantasies
yes.
about like what, and you know, things that I really likely wouldn't do. I am not a pacifist. But you know, I really believe that people who are just awful deserve to get a taste of their own medicine.
When Inglourious Basterds came out, that was one of my favorite movies at the time. I love justice movies. I love them.
Yeah.
That movie was so, despite
also
having
gory.
Brad Pitt in it.
Also pretty gory for me.
Yeah.
But, so yes, movies, we'd like to hear what you think. What are the movies that you like that have to do with veganism or animal rights? Please.
Yeah.
Let us know. Cause I want to see them.
Oh, and you know what else? Cartoon wise, cause we didn't talk about this. I think B movie.
Oh yeah.
B-E-E movie. I think Jerry Seinfeld did that movie.
We didn't talk about kids movies at all. Yeah.
No. The movie is about like this bee who's trying to figure out what his little bee station is in life. And he ends up finding out, you know, he forms a relationship with a human, which is forbidden. They're not supposed to talk to people. And he finds out that humans are stealing, enslaving bees and stealing their honey. And kind of, you know, there are repercussions for this. Like when we talked about bee-free honey and how, you know, bees are so important to the world mm-hmm. because they pollinate things. And that's kind of an arc in the story where, you know, this bee ends up suing the human race.
Right.
And so the bees get all this honey back and they have nothing to do. And so they stop pollinating. And then that ends up being an issue. But so this bee ends up, you know, having a law firm. And towards the end, there's just a quick little snippet of this cow who comes to the bee's law firm and is like wanting to sue humans because humans are stealing the cow's milk. And we have a friend who we hope to have on the show at some point. His name is Al. And, you know, he talks a lot. He has children. And he talks a lot about kind of the welfarist message that he has to kind of censor welfarism in
yeah.
children's books that he reads to his children. And I think that this movie is so, so spot on. I don't
yeah.
think Jerry Seinfeld or any of his friends
right.
are necessarily vegan, but the message is so there.
Yeah.
It's
That's
spot
cool.
on.
Well, like one children's movie that I recommend too, it's like Return of Benji or Benji 2 or something like that. It's very kind of obscure, but it's a kid's movie, Benji. Completely awesome. Like it addresses puppy mill issues and
wow.
and animals as property and the dogs. It even says afterward about the dogs who were the actors in the film were rescued from shelters specific, you know, and they were all trained using positive reinforcement. And there was
so
even
cool.
some issues around like strays and essentially needing to build trust on the animal's time in their own way, being creative around that. Really, really excellent film. Even they talked about black dog syndrome, you know, about how, you know, dogs who aren't as cute
mm-hmm.
get killed at higher rates and various things. So very, very good. I also recommend The Ant Bully, which is good. Very fantastical as well. But it's kind of like it's a good thing. I know children's movies tend to do this where, you know, if there's some bad, you know, the kid is being mean in some way, roles are reversed so
yes.
that the kid can experience what it's like to be on the other side of that. And essentially that's what The Ant Bully is about. And
yeah.
Really very good. So we want to hear about your kids' movies too.
Yeah.
Can we talk about peanut butter cups now?
Please, let's talk about peanut butter cups now.
Okay, cool. So our product review are vegan peanut butter cups.
Oh.
And up until recently, pretty much if you wanted vegan peanut butter cups, you had to make them.
Yeah.
And the homemade ones are awesome. I'm all for that. But now there are a couple of different options for just going to the store and buying peanut butter cups that are essentially, you know, akin to Reese's peanut butter cups.
And Ethique Nouveau carries two different kinds.
Yep. Well,
so there's not just one kind. There's two kinds.
Yep. There is. And so there's two different kinds. My particular favorite is called Justin's. And Justin's is known for their nut butter in general. So they started out just perfecting various nut butters, peanut, hazelnut, walnut, or I mean, not almond. I don't know about walnut. And then they have some that have chocolate mixed in, like chocolate almond and chocolate hazelnut.
They actually sell those too in like kind of single serving packets that you can,
they do,
you know, like bring along so you don't have to make a sandwich at the beginning of the day and have it get all soggy. Like that's what I really like about just their nut butters is that
that's a cool idea.
You can have them in single servings.
But Justin's, they use dark chocolate and the Justin's peanut butter inside. And I believe that they're USDA organic, and also the chocolate is rainforest certified cocoa something. And I don't really even know if that means much. It could be essentially very loose regulation. I'm not sure, but the fact that it's on there, I like it.
You would hope if a company is like vegan and trying to
do the right thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Hope that
so that's pretty cool. And they're my favorite, but Ryan has a different favorite.
My favorite, also available at Ethique Nouveau, is Cleo's. And they're, I guess the primary difference is Justin's is dark chocolate and Cleo's is regular. Rice milk chocolate. So it's more like milk chocolate. I think
peanut butter is really different too, though.
You might be right on that. Also, a big difference is Justin's are kind of more what you're used to. If you're used to like Reese's peanut butter cups, much more, they're like similar in size. I think they're even a little bit bigger. And Cleo's are smaller and they're round, but they're not quite, and they melt really easily.
As ruffly.
But they're really, really, really good.
I think the peanut butter in the Cleo's is more, maybe more traditional. You know, that might be more traditional because it's more sugary, or it's like more whipped or something. It's more smooth, whereas Justin's is kind of more of the whole nut. I don't know,
but
like less processed.
Our taste preferences goes back to our Be-Free Honey episode where I said that I could drink Be-Free Honey. And Dallas is like, oh, I like this kind because it's less sugary. Dallas's sugar threshold is markedly less than mine.
Yeah.
Because I am a sugar whore. And if it's sugary, then that's like, I just
bought
a butter pecan soy delicious ice cream the other day and ate the whole thing. Cause I just, that's how I roll.
And it's like whenever we have cake or cupcakes or something, Ryan's all about the frosting.
Frosting sandwiches. Yeah. I'm frosting instead of cake. I'll just have the frosting and I don't even care about the cake part.
Yeah. And usually I like, you know, have a couple bites of frosting and scrape the rest off and just eat the cake.
Which works out well for us in our friendship.
It does. Yes, it does. I'm happy about that.
It's a perfect universe.
It's just like with my husband, I don't eat mushrooms and I can just pick them out and give them to him. And he's so happy and I'm happy. Yeah. Nothing's going to waste. It's a great up. It's great. Okay.
Have you tried either one of those?
I don't eat mushrooms either.
No, not mushrooms.
No, the peanut butter cups.
No, I have not tried them.
Silly. Oh.
Well, you'll have to come to the next meeting and try them.
Okay.
I'll even buy them for you. It'll be my special gift. Hey, if somebody wants to write to us, and actually I'd be willing to say like the first five people that talk to us about a movie, I don't care if you're like telling us about a movie we didn't mention or if
tell
you're
us
commenting,
about a movie. Yeah.
You can either comment on our Facebook page about it or comment on our blog at stillvegan.org. First five people to do it, I will buy you
the one of your choice.
The one of your choice and send them to you.
That's pretty generous, lady. And
I know. I'm so
She's
generous.
She's so nice.
I also want to say, I think that there have been, as a chocolate lover and one of kind of the sad things, you know, I've only been vegan for a few years. And just in that short amount of time, I mean, it's a long time, but it's a short amount of time compared to how long you've been vegan. I'm sure you know this too. The strides in kind of the normal products that you're used to and how good vegan products are now.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, I didn't eat chocolate at first when I was vegan because I don't like dark chocolate, and there wasn't any good kind of comparable milk chocolates out there. And I just bought over Easter through Etsy, I bought like vegan Cadbury cream eggs. Like, you don't have to go without anything now.
Yeah.
Because they're just, the taste is so good. It's not exactly the same, but it's still amazing.
Yeah.
It's just,
that's one of my favorite parts.
Chocolate is probably like the best invention in the universe to me.
That's one of my favorite parts.
Brushing my teeth before I could go without rice milk chocolate, I think. But actually I would need to brush my teeth because of the sugar. Anyway. Yeah. The strides in chocolate development.
Well, in everything. That's one of my very favorite things about being vegan too, is that the rediscovery of foods that you used to like,
yeah.
You know, you used to have. It's a really exciting time.
I just got back from vacation and my husband and I and a couple of friends had rented a cabin, and we rented a cabin with a kitchen. And so we cooked the whole time, and everything we had was so indulgent. And every time we cooked, I laughed and made a comment, and I was like, what do vegans eat? Because we had burgers that were, oh, I thought I was going to die. They were so good. And Skittles. And I mean,
yeah.
We were just so indulgent all weekend on food that, like, you can have your vegan cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to do it anymore.
Not at all.
Unless you have health issues. Then you maybe want to eat more vegetables and less Daya.
Can we go on to the green challenge?
We sure can.
Awesome.
It's time for the green challenge.
Green challenge.
Green challenge.
There's no gloves. There's no swords.
No white suits.
Uh-uh. It's just green challenge.
You're just doing the earth a solid.
All right. So the green challenge this episode is dryer balls.
What about
which
them?
I think is really funny to say.
Balls.
I'm just being juvenile. Dryer balls.
Elliot, we
not
say balls.
Moisture balls. Dryer balls. Yep.
Balls.
So dryer balls. Essentially, there are a bunch of different kinds out there. The ones that I use, will have a link for them. On the blog, I'm sure. I think I don't remember what they're called exactly, but there'll be a link. And they are like a natural rubber kind of thing, and they are hollow inside, and they've got little nubs on them. And basically, you toss them in the dryer, and they rumble around in the dryer when you're drying a load of clothes. And it essentially helps reduce static cling. It acts kind of like a dryer sheet would, and it also helps kind of fluff things up even more so that the air can circulate around and your drying time is reduced, which is really nice. So it's got kind of the added benefit. Hanging clothes on the line is always an awesome idea.
Yes.
And I like to do that a lot. But for things that you do dry, if you need to get things going, or like my clothesline is in the basement and it can be damp in there in the summertime, and
or scary because,
you know,
it's a basement.
Yeah. Or
if
scary.
You watched a scary movie and now you don't want to,
or if you don't want to have clothes like all over your house or whatever it is and you do want to use a dryer, dryer balls are an awesome investment. They are a little bit of an investment. I don't know exactly how much they are, maybe $10 to $20 or something.
Where would you find dryer balls?
I got mine at some place like Storables or the Container Store or something.
Okay.
It was in one of those simplify your life and get organized kinds of fits that I get into sometimes. But I've also seen them like at the Living Green Expo and things like that. I think they are sold at various green stores, and I haven't seen them at co-ops, but I know you can even get them. I'm sure you can get them at Target. I know they're sold at CVS, not this brand, a different brand. But
you can probably
the same
also
idea.
Get them on the internet.
You definitely can get them on the internet. And we will have a link to a place where you can get them. The ones that I recommend anyway, because there are a bunch of different kinds. But anyway, I think it's great. It will help reduce the amount of time that you use your dryer and make
That's
your clothes
awesome.
Nice. Yeah. So, all right, on to events.
Okay. So we're just going to try to breeze through these really quick because our episode is getting long. The first three that we're going to talk about are come to you from the Animal Rights Coalition. on Sunday, July 17th, we have a Petland demo,
yep.
which we've talked about at length in different episodes.
Also, that morning, July 17th, I'm doing vegan grocery shopping tour at Linden Hills Co-op, and that is also through the Animal Rights Coalition.
Yep.
But it costs $2 to register. It's about 90 minutes long, and you should totally
show up
if you can. There are openings. Yep.
Okay. So, again, these grocery shopping tours, if you're at all curious about going vegan, so helpful. To have somebody just walk you through the grocery store, show you quick what to look for on a nutrition label, point out products like nutritional yeast, which you are going to want.
Yep.
Things like that. And are they doing some sort of promotional? Or are they giving some?
Generally, when I do them, I don't know if they're happening in other, you know, I know they happen occasionally some places in the Midwest, but when I do them, I do ask the venue to supply like samples or a coupon or something like that.
Okay.
So that people, usually what Linden Hills does is they give like a $5 off $40 purchase or something along those lines, maybe a $5 gift card so that people can pick up. Try a product. And it's great. You know,
so
you
do your grocery shopping.
Yeah, it's totally fun. So
and
that's
I
happening.
Think also, I know this sounds kind of silly, but, you know, people are afraid of change. And if you've never been to a co-op, like you may feel kind of like if you're not a dirty hippie, you might be a little bit nervous about walking into a co-op.
Yeah.
And so, you know, go with someone that can, just so you know, co-ops are just like grocery stores.
Yes, they are.
it's not a bunch of white people with dreads, although you might see one or two, but it's not. They're just like grocery stores.
They are.
Yeah.
Definitely, if you can go. And if you know somebody who would benefit from going, tell them to go or bring them with you or whatever. So
that same day, 2:00 is the Petland demo in St. Paul at the Sunray
Shopping Center. Mall. Yep.
Those are so fun. The Animal Rights Coalition hasn't done one for a little while.
Not in St. Paul. They've been doing a few in Shakopee, but.
Because the St. Paul ones require permits.
Yeah.
So we have to get those. But there's a couple lined up. And so that's the most current one. And those are a ton of fun. Show up. You don't even need to bring a sign because.
We got them.
They'll be there for you. So that is that day from 2 to like 3:30. Even if you can't come for the whole time, just come for whatever you can.
Yeah. It's not scary.
Only an hour and a half. You're just standing there talking to people.
Yeah. Generally with.
And by people, I mean your friends. You're just hanging out.
These demos or come meet us. These demos also not scary. There's not like tear gas. Nobody's getting arrested.
No.
You know, I mean, I think that sometimes people equate protest with drama or something, and it's just really
they're drama free
there.
And even when, and it's funny because when there is any drama, and by drama I mean like the security guard coming over and like saying we have to show the permit or whatever, everyone's like, oh, what's going on, what's the drama, oh, someone's paying attention to us. So yeah, they're fun.
It's good.
Saturday, July 23rd, through the Animal Rights Coalition, myself and Megan Duke, who you should remember from when we talked about Vegan Iron Chef, we'll be conducting a tabling training. I know that kind of evokes thoughts of activism, but it's really the purpose of this is to be able to talk to anybody. I mean, anybody that's vegan, even if you're just a dietary vegan, you're going to find yourself having to defend yourself at one point or another. If you're trying to talk to your family or your friends or a loved one about it, it's really to just help you learn how to be comfortable just talking to people, and, you know, even people that you're friends with, just how to respond to things and how to just become comfortable getting used to kind of some of the stats and saying things out loud.
Yep.
And so that'll be good. So come to that. That'll be fun. And it's going to be very small and intimate. There's not a limit on how many people can come,
nope.
can go, but I imagine it'll be reasonably small. So it'll be fun. And it's free, and that's from 1 to 2. And on the 24th, Sunday, July 24th, the Animal Rights Coalition has a farm tour
Long Siding Farm. It's a community-supported agriculture.
But what time? I have it at 2 p.m. my calendar at 2, yeah.
Yeah, 2 p.m. That does require a registration through Vegan Meetup
and
Minneapolis.
That's $5.
And it's $5. Definitely. It's going to be fun. I mean, it's just if you've ever wanted to go check out an organic vegetable and fruit farm, kind of see what it's all, you know, where local organic food comes from, it's a good time to do that.
Also, I think I'll go ahead and say this. The Animal Rights Coalition has a book group, which you should all know by now. And our next book group is on Monday, July 25th at Midwest Vegan Radio Studios. So if you are local to the area and you're interested in coming to that, you can either email us at midwestveganradio@gmail.com or you can contact the Animal Rights Coalition.
Animal Rights Coalition is probably a good place to do that just because
it's their event.
I'm on that email all the time through my job.
Yep. So were you so inclined? It's at 7 p.m. The book that we are reading for the book group is Peter Singer's, what's the book?
Animal Liberation.
Yeah, Animal Liberation.
It's a classic.
And even if you have only read part of it or haven't read it, the discussions that we have at book groups are great. So we encourage you to read the book, which you can pick up at Ethique Nouveau, or, you know, you can come even if you haven't read it. You just need to find out where Meadows Vegan Radio Studios is, which Dallas can tell you if you contact her.
Since all of the book group locations for the Animal Rights Coalition book group are held in private residences, you need to contact the Animal Rights Coalition to let them know that you are planning to attend. You'd like information, because otherwise you won't know where to go, because it's a secret until, you know, folks know. We don't want to put that all over the internets for anybody to find it.
Right. This may be a little out of order because of something I'm going to get back to, which isn't Animal Rights Coalition related, but the Animal Rights Coalition also on Sunday, August 7th, is Paws on Grand.
Yeah.
So there's an event going on in St. Paul, Minnesota. This is really heavy Minnesota-based today because Noreen isn't here to help us.
Well, yeah, I guess.
And also, the Animal Rights Coalition has a lot going on.
Vegan Drinks is
Vegan Drinks.
On July 28th.
Yep, at
July 28th. It's a Thursday.
At the Triple Rock.
Yep, so that's a good one. But why don't we talk about the Cancer Project classes?
Yes, the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, who was the brains behind Forks Over Knives. Or at least, they were heavily involved in that, though, weren't they? I mean, the two of the primary people in that documentary are also tied to PCRM.
I don't know.
Okay. The answer to that is yes. So the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine has a project called the Cancer Project. At one point, a while back, they do these all over the place, but one was held at Ethique Nouveau. And they come and teach four classes about nutrition. There's cooking demonstrations and eating involved, which is always fun. And so it looks like they've got some coming up at different places in Illinois. Geneva Living Well Cancer Resource Center on July 16th, 23rd, 30th, and August 6th. So there are four classes. And Skokie Block Medical Center for Integrative Cancer Treatment on July 20th. And is Missouri... Does Missouri count? There's a whole bunch of them.
Missouri's Midwest.
I will have a link to this, but... You know, if you're in England, that's not Midwest Vegan Radio territory. But Missouri in Springfield at Mama Jean's Market on September 1st, 8th, 15th, and 22nd. Also in Springfield, Salad Master Healthy Cooking Center. They do a lot with Salad Master. On July 21st, they've got one. So we'll have a link for that. But they do those cancer classes. And even if, I don't know how anybody's lives haven't been afflicted somehow by cancer, but they're just... I can't believe how much I learned from one class, how much I learned about nutrition.
I know from talking with the woman who teaches them here, they're highly, highly competitive positions to get. I mean, it's very difficult to get these positions. Only one out of every 50 applicants is accepted, and they're highly trained once they are accepted. So when you're getting into one of these classes, you have access to I would consider an expert on the issue. Absolutely.
And I believe, I can't speak to other locations. I know the one that was held at Ethique Nouveau through the Animal Rights Coalition. The classes were $15 each and worth every single penny.
Yep.
So that's a little bit more than a lot of the stuff that
we tend
is
to do
going on. Yeah, a lot of things are free or $2 or $5. $15 to change your life, to learn, like... you know, to how to prevent cancer and how to cook if you're not familiar with cooking some different things and trying foods that you maybe haven't tried before.
Man, you're making me want to sign up for one of these.
I know. We're going to.
I haven't taken them.
We'll take a trip down to Texas or Alaska to do one of these.
Well, I mean, we've got a trainer in the area, so when she's teaching next, we can.
Or we could just take a road trip. Why do you hate road trips?
Why do you hate freedom?
Why do you hate the Minnesota Twins? Why do you hate kittens?
I don't hate road trips. I actually have never set foot in Texas. My name is Dallas. I don't intend to ever go to Texas.
I went to Texas for a Tom Waits concert. El Paso!
Maybe I might end up in Texas eventually, but I kind of like saying, yeah, my name's Dallas, but I've never set foot in Texas. I just like that.
Okay, we can go to Alaska instead. Maybe we can see Russia.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. And whales.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, that's pretty much all we have
I
to talk about.
I think that's all we have. We're rambling, heat-stroked idiots right now.
Yeah. I'm ready for dinner. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
So send us your comments about movies and get peanut butter cups.
Peanut butter cups. Five
Woo-hoo.
Of them.
Woohoo!
You know you want this. I will mail them anywhere. I will mail them to Alaska. If you're listening in Alaska, I don't know why, but...
You might be.
Yeah.
All right.
I'll mail them to you. All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.